Hello, everyone. We're back on the record, 3:44 p.m. on Friday, December 8th, 2023, in the matter of the appeal of the critical area buffer reduction notice of administrative decision 22-02629. We were just having Mr. Telegin complete his examination of Dr. Cook. And I will now ask the applicant and Kitsap County if either of you attorneys have questions for this witness.
Can I ask one question really quick? I'm sorry. Just procedurally. One of my witnesses, Dr. Rosina, is in New Hampshire. It's very late his time and he has someplace he'd like to go. It's almost 4 o'clock. And I'm just wondering, I don't know how long cross-examination will take, but I don't, even if I called him now, I don't think we'd get through it. Could I dismiss him and then we'll figure out a date to call him back? Just asking, because he asked me to ask because he's sitting over there.
Yeah. Well, given that it sounds like even if you did recall him right now and we return to Dr. Cook, that you don't believe we'd get through him. Is that what you've said?
I guess I'm saying anticipating that even if just, you know, examination of Dr. Cook took like a half an hour, it's going to take a while to get through him. So since he's going to have to be called back anyways, I think I'm wondering if we could just accommodate him and agree that there will be not a full day. I want to be done with this as much as anybody else, but one other short spat to work him in.
Mr. Telegin, when we complete cross-examination and any redirect of Dr. Cook, do you have anybody else to call today?
Mr. Lubisher. So I could call him and fill time, right? Okay. But that's what I'm saying. Mr. Lubisher, I don't know, but we'll definitely it will take us very close.
Okay.
I'm concerned because I understand Dr. Cook is leaving the country. And so I think it's important that we get through her cross-examination today.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. So I don't know how long it's going to take. So I feel it's safer to finish that. And I apologize to Mr. Rosine, but if he's going to have to come back anyways.
No, that's not what I was asking.
Okay. I'm not following. Sorry.
No. You do Dr. Cook. We get done with her. I'm just saying, can Dr. Rosine leave now? Right. Yeah. And come back and do his testimony in a later time. Yeah.
Yeah, that works.
That's your order. I don't dictate your order. So
I know. That's why I was just asking the examiner.
That works for me. Mr. Getches, do you have any comments?
I don't have any objection to letting Dr. Rosine go.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you so much, all.
Yes, thanks. Okay. Mr. Getches, do you have cross-examination? Do you want to start or Ms. Liao?
I hardly have anything, just a couple maybe questions. Good afternoon, Dr. Cook. You mentioned you had some training in geology. Do you consider yourself, though, an expert in hydrology?
No.
Okay. And then this is a question, I don't know the answer to it, regarding we've got the three factors with wetlands that all need to be present. But if, let's say they're not all present at the same time, let's say there's a pretty big gap, let's say they're never all present at the same time, but they are all are present in the same place, but never at the same time. And there's a big gap between them. Would you call that a wetland?
Yes. If indicators secondary or tertiary were still present, yes.
They don't have to be present at the same time?
Well, what I'm saying is the primary indicators may not be present, but if you look at that list on the data sheets, there's a whole list of indicators that are there, and some of those are called secondary and tertiary, and what they do is they look at inferred features that will identify that the primary things are present at another time of year. So, for example, for hydrology, you can have a rack line on a tree, which means that the water was up so high it left debris on the tree. I mean, there's those things that you look for too, but that takes a lot of experience and extra training to identify those. So not everybody's that good at delineating. And that's definitely true. You got to know how to look for some of these secondary and tertiary indicators if you're not there at an ideal time of year.
Okay. So they have to be, they don't have to be at the same time. They do have to be at the same place though. Like you couldn't have the hydrophytic vegetation, and then 4 feet over there, you've got the hydric soils, and then 2 feet over there, you've got the wetland hydrology, right?
No, they've got to be in the plot where you're doing you're collecting your data.
Okay. All right. Nothing else. I don't have any other questions.
May I proceed? Examiner Marshall.
Expert, and they used the word.
Yeah.
And I don't consider myself an expert.
Unmute. Sorry about that. Yeah, it froze up on my side. Okay. thank you. Okay. Oops. Sorry. Okay, Ms. Liao, please proceed. Sorry.
Thank
about
you.
That.
Thank you.
Okay, I do have one other question. I can hold it. I can yeah. save it. Regarding the when we were questioning Ms. Bartlett about the connection, hydraulic connection, surface water connection between P2 and L2, we were asking whether she would expect there ever to be bilateral flow, and she didn't think there would be because that would be very unlikely because a wetland P2 is uphill, upslope from L2, but I don't recall where she was getting the bilateral flow requirement from. Did you watch that testimony? Do you have any comment on that?
Yeah, by definition, you wouldn't have bilateral flow. It's a slope wetland. It flows unidirectional. That's the definition of a slope wetland. And everybody's agreed that it is a slope wetland. So no, I don't know where that came from.
Okay. All right. That was the only thing I wanted to ask.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Getches. Ms. Liao.
Thank you. Dr. Cook, I'm actually going to pick things up right from where Mr. Getches just left off with us. Are you familiar with the Department of Ecology wetland rating system, the 2014 version?
Yes, I participated on the team that developed it.
Okay, great. You're aware that is a resource document that's been adopted by reference in the county's critical area regulations. Is that?
I'm going to object. The 2014 wasn't adopted in the code we're talking about here.
Okay, let me go to the ecology. I'm going to go to the, excuse me just a moment. I'm going to go to the code right quick.
That again, sorry.
Yeah, so this is, this is from chapter 19200 of the Vested Code we've been looking at. This is subsection 19.200.210, subpart A2. Kitsap County uses the Kitsap Washington Department of Ecology, Washington State Wetland Rating System for Western Washington Revised 2004, or as amended hereafter, to categorize wetlands for the purposes of establishing wetland buffer widths, wetland uses, and replacement ratios for wetlands. I believe we've also heard other testimony that supplemental guidance has been used in this proceeding that was adopted after the Vested Code. I would ask for permission to ask some questions with regards to the 2014 updated wetland rating classification system.
Object. There has been no testimony about supplemental materials being used subsequent to the code. If she's referring to Ms. Cook's discussion of supplements to the 1987 Wetlands Delineation Manual, she did reference that, but delineations are very different from ratings.
Let's see. I do believe that there was testimony regarding the rating of wetland P2, Dr. Cook was questioning the re-rating as well as the delineations. So I'm going to allow the questions on based on the 2004 Department of Ecology Wetland Rating System. parties can address relevance and or, you know, we shouldn't be looking at that in closing written closing arguments.
Right. And I wasn't objecting to discussion of the 2004 Wetland Ready Manual. It was the 2014.
All right.
Ms. Bartlett did use the 2014 in reference to her wetland in her memorandum that was admitted into the record for reevaluating wetland P2.
Right. But this is cross of Dr. Cook, not Ms. Bartlett.
Yeah. When we get to the manual, I'm wanting to speak to this question about the directional flow of the water between P2 and L1, L2, and the relevance of that with respect to her conclusions that that she believes that they should be considered one wetland.
I think we are within the scope of Dr. Cook, even though there were not direct questions regarding the 2014 manual. Her testimony has been addressing Ms. Bartlett's testimony. And so I think that in order to allow a proper rebuttal here, questions on that, because there were questions that came up in Dr. Cook's testimony about the water flow. So I'm going to allow questions based on the manual on which Ms. Bartlett based her expert opinions.
Thank you. This is section 4.1 of the 2014 update to Ecology's Wetland Rating Manual, and it addresses wetland units and large contiguous wetlands and valleys, both depressional and riverine. Are you familiar with this section?
I am, but it doesn't apply here.
And why doesn't apply here?
We're looking at slope wetlands. That's a different hydrogeomorphic class. You're in the wrong section of the manual.
I see. So depressional and so
you have to go to the slope section.
Okay. Give me just a moment. Sharing for a moment. Actually, I'm sorry. Wetland P2 is not is a slope wetland, and L1 L2 is that also slope wetland?
No, that's a riverine wetland, but we're referring to the connection between P2 and L1, and that it's a slope hydrogeomorphic class that leads into a riverine, and that portion of L1 that receives the water from P2 is still a part of a slope wetland.
I see. Give me just a moment. I am going to switch gears here for a moment. You provided testimony at the outset of your rebuttal that demonstrating some incredulity and end of the day, you were surprised, we'll just use a different word, that Radeke didn't catch previously that that they had rated wetland L1 and L2 together with P2 based on the theory that it was a mosaic wetland. Can I ask you, do you ever make mistakes?
Not four times over, and not that's been technically reviewed, no.
But do you ever make mistakes?
Yes, of course, we all do.
Great. Do you ever realize that do you ever not realize you've made a mistake? You made a mistake and nobody points it out until a little while later, or maybe a few
years. I've had mistakes pointed out at hearings, in fact, yes.
Yeah. If no one ever questions you about a mistake and you're not aware that you've made a mistake, is there any reason for you to go back and relook, double check a mistake that you didn't know you'd made?
Probably not, no.
Okay. Did you hear, were you present for the testimony of Mr. Costers, Quentin Costers?
Yes.
Okay. And did you hear him testify that when they did the on-site investigation in 2018, they were focused on redelineating the boundaries of wetlands, such as including wetland P2?
Yes.
Yeah, and that they weren't re-rating them. They're just re-evaluating the boundaries.
Correct.
Okay. Did you hear, I believe both Mr. Wright and Mr. Costers testimony that their approach in wetland ratings is to take a conservative approach.
Yes, I heard that. Yeah.
And so if they had determined to rate L1, L2, P2 as one wetland at an earlier point in time, would you consider that a conservative approach?
No, I think they're apples and oranges. Okay. I wouldn't call that.
No. Let me restate the question. So in the context of, I think there's been some surprise that no one went back to relook at the prior conclusion that L1 and L2 and P2 should have been rated separately. For them to be rated together, is that a more conservative approach for them to be re-rated separately?
Again, I don't think they have anything to do with each other. They were rated together because in the landscape, they clearly were connected. So and the same argument goes for adding in those other two wetlands that are just nearby as part of the L1, L2. There had to be a different justification. If they were being conservative, they would have connected the other wetland, which I believe, what was it, 12? And there were two other wetlands that were in one of the figures. Let me see, I think I have that map up here. And they would have, if they were being conservative, they would have connected those two.
Understood. But a conclusion, I mean, everyone's really surprised. Nobody's gone back and second guessed why the reason. I mean, because I understand your theory is that it's because they were connected wetlands. The Radicke, the two consultants who at least the one consultant who was responsible for that report, he disagrees. We can all disagree here. We're all trying to suspect what was in their minds back in 2007. But at least in terms of questioning, that approach, to go back as Ms. Bartlett's testified, to say, I'm going to look more closely at considering P2 to be rated as part of L1 and L2, that she was hesitant to do that because she thought that she would be scrutinized because it is a less conservative determination to say that those are separate and that those should be rated separately. Would you not agree?
No, I wouldn't. Again, it's a completely different issue. I mean, I see why she was hesitant but I don't think she really looked into why originally she was accepting the theory that Mr. Wright came up with, that it was a mosaic. And she was afraid that if she now stated it wasn't part of a mosaic, she would be questioned. But I think there's a prevalence of documentation that the mosaic was not why they did it to start with. So I don't think she thought of it in that sense. I think it was presented to her as it was a mosaic, and she didn't look past what the real reason would have been for why it was a separate, why it was connected back then.
Yeah, I understand your opinion is that that wasn't the reason that Radicke made those calls back in 2007. And you said that when she was presented that it was a mosaic. Who presented that to her?
I assume Mr. Wright did prior to the hearing.
Okay. And you made that assumption based on the testimony you've heard today?
Well,
heard them over the hearing.
The other day. The fact that all three were pretty consistent, and I include Mr. Heacock on that. So I'm assuming there was a discussion amongst all the parties.
Okay. L1 and L2, you've said just now, are riverine wetlands. Is that correct? And P2 is a slope wetland.
Can you hold on a second? The dog's barking. Hold on. Yes, sorry. Cat and dog are really misbehaving today. I normally lock them away, but I didn't. I should have. I apologize. Okay, sorry, I'm back.
Yeah. So you said a few minutes ago that a riverine, L1 and L2 are a riverine wetland, whereas wetland P2 is a slope wetland. Is that correct?
L1, L2 has appears to have some slope components too. And yeah, from the rating, the delineation methodology, when there are multiple hydrogeomorphic sources of water, and we type the wetlands according to the source of water, then there's a hierarchy of how you rate them or what rating forms you use. But L1, L2 has what, as far as I can ascertain, multiple different water sources, some of which are slope, some of which are riverine.
And so you would, so P2 as a slope wetland, you're suggesting you should assess that together with L1 and L2, which is a riverine,
L1, L2 also has some slope components to it, as far as I can see. Yeah, from how it's been described.
Okay. So even though the two, okay. I'd like to ask you some questions. You've provided some, you've spent some time today talking about the photos that Ms. Bartlett had taken and what you can determine based on those photos. In your prior testimony, you spoke to some conclusions that you had made about wetland P2. This was the first time you were here with us. I think it was the first day. Based on some photos that Mr. Lubisher had taken, is that correct?
Yes, I didn't have her photos at that point.
Right, but you had previously provided some testimony based on those photos and you had made some conclusions.
Yes, Mr. Lubisher's.
Yeah, so there's about 27 pages of these photos. I'm just going to quickly scroll through these. Do these look like the photos that you were provided by Mr. Lubisher? Do these look familiar to you?
Yes, they do.
Okay, all right. Just a moment. Before I go into this, have you been onto the site yourself?
No, I've had to rely solely on reports and photos.
Got it. So all of your observations you've been making about the existence of wetlands, about the characterization of soils, have all been either based on photos or reports in the record. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And typically, though, would you think that an on-site evaluation of these factors and determinations about a classification of a wetland, should those be done based on an on-site visit?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Okay. So just going to these photos, and I'll kind of scroll through them just for the moment again to refresh yourself. You know, unlike Ms. Bartlett's annotated photos, these don't really have anything other than a page number to describe where we are on the Arborwood sites. Just, you know, various photos of trees and leaves and ground. Did you have any guidance to know where these photos were taken?
Yes, I actually had extensive guidance because Mr. Lubisher, on three different occasions, we sat down and I said, well, you need to tell me where these are and where you're looking and what the orientation is. And can you go back out and take some from this other, you know, from point A to point B, so I know exactly where I am. So yes, I did have guidance.
I see. Okay. I'm gonna stop sharing for just a moment. With regards to your testimony regarding the area between wetland P2 and L1, L2, as I think you said, everyone's sort of agreed that there has been some sort of logging road there, at least in some point in time. Do you have any idea of how long that logging road's been there?
No.
No.
It doesn't seem like anybody does.
Yeah, but if you haven't evaluated how long it's been there. So it could have been there for couple years, couple decades, 100 years, nobody knows, right?
I think we've settled down to tens of years instead of a couple years. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the testimony anyway from others.
Yeah. The theory that Mr. Teljan asked you about regarding wetland P2 actually not having been connected to L1 and L2, but having been a separate, potentially being a separately created wetland, a depression created actually after the road had been installed. That was actually testimony from Mr. Wright before Mr. Peacock, I believe, or at least Mr. Wright provided that testimony as well. Do you recall that?
Not in the detail that Mr. Heacock described it. No.
Oh, okay. Well, Mr. Wright did. Mr. Wright provided testimony that, in response to this theory that they were one wetland, he gave an opinion that, the logging road that was installed, that wetland P2 could have also been created after the, a road was put down based on a depression that was created thereafter. Can I ask you? You've rejected that theory. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And you've rejected that on the basis I know at least in part on the age of the soils, on the height, yeah, of the fact that there's higher soil. Can I, yeah, ask you, did you hear Mr. Wright's testimony with regards to the formation of hydric soils?
Yes.
Yeah. And did you hear his testimony that he did not believe that hydric soils always take many, many years to develop?
Yeah, but that's not pertaining to organic hydric soils. That's mineral hydric soils. And for that, it would be correct, but again, we're still talking decades, but you don't have hydric soils that have that kind of the kind of organic content that the ones we're looking at apply to his statement. No, it's that would, and I'm sure he didn't mean that kind. I'm sure he meant hydric mineral soils.
Oh, I see. But he didn't say that. You're just assuming that's what he meant.
No, right? That's the science. You can't have.
But Mr. Wright still stood by this theory that the logging road could have created that wetland, and he was aware of the soils that have been observed on that site as well. Is he not?
I'm going to object. That assumes facts and evidence or not that are not in evidence.
Yeah, I can't speak, but he wouldn't have made that statement because we all know that the organic soils take hundreds of years to develop, not decades.
But he did make the statement that it was his theory that it's a plausible theory that the wetland P2 could have formed after the installation of the road, which, as you've said, everyone sort of is settling on a period of decades, not a few years, but at least a few decades, that road's been there.
I also remember him saying that he didn't specifically go out to that particular wetland that that Rick Lundquist did. And another stuff. So I don't know that he actually saw that particular wetland, but I'm telling you that the soils that I've seen from that wetland could not have formed in decades. There is no way scientifically that that's possible. So Mr. Wright would not have made that statement. He knows, you know, he's been doing this for way too long to have made a statement that organic richness of wetland soil could have formed in just a few decades.
And that's based on the photos you've observed, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Give me just a moment here. I want to see if I can find something. Apologies. me just a moment. Sorry, I'm just in a document that I found. Okay. Might come back to that. Let me move on here. In the interest of time. Let's see. You provided some testimony with regards to back on this topic of what the human eye can detect between 1% and 5% for purposes of evaluating hydric soils. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. And you said that you knew that based on the fact in part that you have a PhD. What did you do your dissertation on?
I looked at the interactions of particular plants with respect to the soils and the soils and the geology.
I see.
So it was a kind of three topic. It was how the plants interacted with fairly toxic soils.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay.
But my major professor was a soil scientist.
And speaking of that, you mentioned your professor is the person that you learned this.
No, not my professor. No.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. You mentioned, I'm sorry. I apologize. You're right. You said that you had taken two classes from the man who wrote the wetland manuals.
Vasilis.
Yeah. And he said he showed some papers from you at the time that demonstrated that what you were testifying to with respect to what you can observe between 1% and 5%.
Yes. Yeah, he did.
You know if those papers are published?
Yeah, they were published in peer-reviewed journals. I just, you know, I have not had a chance to try to see if I could relocate those at this point in time.
I see. But did you hear the testimony of Dr. Wright that seemed to conflict with that opinion that you can't detect below 5%?
Yes, and I know that people think that they can, but the science contradicts that they can see 1 to 2%, especially in soils, the colors that we're speaking here. When they're that dark, you cannot see them unless they're at least 5%.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can dark soils result from causes other than hydrology?
Not in the Pacific Northwest, no. There's something called a mollisol, but they're not found here. So in other parts of the world, yes, they can, but not here.
Okay. What about the prairies?
Yeah, that's a mollisol. We don't have not West Side Washington.
Okay.
Yeah.
Give me just a minute here while I try to pull up another exhibit. Regarding your questions on seasonal evaluation of wetlands, in particular with respect to time of year that you think is best to evaluate hydric soils. So you effectively described that was later in the season than what's been done in this case and been described otherwise in the manuals, at least for purposes of evaluating hydrology and vegetation. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there any published guidance indicating that evaluation of hydric soils should be made in that later part of the season is per your opinion?
Well, the delineation manual, the 87 that we're actually and the supplement all says that wetlands should be evaluated during the growing season and then describes what defines the growing season. So, and then it's just experiential. And I've been doing wetland delineation since 1983. So Again, a lot of years. And so as Chris Wright and Rick Lundquist, et cetera, and Joanne's been doing it a very long time too. So
sure.
It's just something you learn as you've been doing it longer. And you've had experiences where you were asked to go out when you felt you shouldn't and you did, and then you were sorry. That's happened.
Sure.
Yeah.
But that's, I mean, still, as you said, you know, Mr. Wright's been doing this for a long time as well. And he did not share that same opinion of yours that the hydric soils needed to be evaluated later in the season, I believe. Is that right?
Well, we're not just talking the soils here. We're talking all three criteria. And that was my point, is that there's an optimal time for evaluating these different criteria, you know, the veg, the soils, and the hydrology. And so we keep honing in on the soils. It's not just a soil issue. It's all three criteria. We don't do a single indicator delineation methodology. We look at all three, and you need to look at all three. So I wish everybody would stop just emphasizing the soils. And in fact, of all the three, the soils are probably the most difficult to evaluate. And I do third party reviews for lots of jurisdictions too. And time again, mistakes are made evaluating soils more than any of the others, other than if you've got a type of habitat that has grasses, sedges, and rushes, and that's your dominant veg, and that takes a pretty special expertise. So people screw up on that too. But soils are very hard to read. Hydrology is easy because it's either there or it's not, and there's secondary indicators that are pretty obvious, but soils are very hard to read. A lot of the things that we see can be what we call relict, and they can have formed decades before or hundreds of years before and no longer be present, which happens in a lot of our urbanized areas. But, you know, veg, if you know the plants, you should be able to do that, but the soils are hard to determine. So I wish people would stop just talking about soils and these delineations. It's not just soils, it's all three.
Yeah, no, we all agree. Yeah, it just, that was what you've provided most of your testimony on in the last proceeding. So can I go back? We were talking earlier you had mentioned give me just a moment. I apologize. I keep thinking I'm finding my documents and I am not. So just a moment. I apologize. Just the last couple questions here. You obviously you heard the testimony of Ms. Decker earlier today, and you provided your own opinions about the source of hydrology for wetland P2. You did hear Ms. Decker's testimony that they found evidence of groundwater both north and south of wetland P2 in their recent 4-foot evaluation. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So at least would you agree that wetland P2 is being, there's sources of hydrology, at least at that shallow groundwater level, coming from at least multiple directions?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And the fact that there's a culvert there clearly also indicated that there was water, because otherwise why would they have bothered putting in a culvert under that under the skid road?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, surface water, shallow groundwater, deeper groundwater, because it goes down a slope. I'm sure it comes from lots of different places.
All right, no further questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Liao. Mr. Getches, it looks like you might have a few more questions.
Only one. I was just wondering, you mentioned you do sometimes do third party reviews. Do you remember when the last one was that you did?
I just did one this week for City of Issaquah.
City of Issaquah?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Mr. Telegin, redirect.
Thank you. So first thing, you had a discussion with Ms. Liao about difference between slope wetlands and river rain wetlands, right? Pointing out to her that P2 has slope characteristics, L2 has riverine characteristics, but also has some sort of slope characteristics to it, right?
Yeah.
So here's a fancy term. I don't know what it means. You can tell me. Are those hydrogeomorphic classes?
Yes, they are. What that indicates is a source of hydrology for a wetland.
I see. Okay, and so I'm going to pull up a
predominant source of hydrology, I should say. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm pulling up, this is an a page out of Ms. Bartlett's exhibit R5. This was the memorandum that was submitted to us on September 23rd of this year as an explanation of why wetland P2 should be rated as a category 4. I'm not going to focus on the particulars of her actual rating, but I'm just looking at the form itself, right? Yes. And so we have, as we take a trip through the rating manual, we have various questions that are sort of like threshold questions, right? They're not about like the benefits and the functions. They're just sort of like describing what kind of wetland it is. And they're sort of like yes, no questions. Does it have this? Does it have that? And it sort of shunts you off in different direction. And the whole point is to tell you, is it a slope wetland? Is it a depressional wetland? Is it a riverine wetland? Right?
Correct.
Right. So you go through these series of questions and then you get down to this box. And it says HGM classes. And what does HGM stand for?
Hydrogeomorphic.
Hydrogeomorphic.
Means the source of hydrology.
Right. And it says HGM classes within the wetland unit being rated. And so then we have various denotations. We have slope plus riverine. And then we go over to the right and it says HGM class to use in rating riverine. Right. And so tell me about those. What do those tell you, or what do they do in terms of the rating system?
When you have a wetland system of L1, L2, P2, et cetera, and you have multiple sources of hydrology, in other words, hydrogeomorphic classes, this is telling you which rating sheet to use in the field to score your to score the rating. So if you have slope and riverine class, you don't use the slope data sheet, which Ms. Bartlett did. You use the riverine data sheet. And the reason this is important is that the maximum score for riverine is much higher, and therefore the class is much higher than you can possibly score with just the slope wetlands.
I see. So so if we were out in the field and we were rating L2/L1 and P2, and we believe that those wetlands basically made up one wetland, we would see the L2 part of it was sort of one hydrogeomorphic class, right, slope, but the rest of it, L2, the big one, P2. Was riverine.
Yes.
And so then we would look at this, box and we would see, oh, we have slope plus riverine. Therefore, we use the riverine HGM class in our rating.
Yes, correct.
Okay. And so within a given wetland, you can have different hydrogeomorphic classes.
Correct.
Okay. So, so again, this is Ms. Bartlett's 2023, September 23rd, 2023 memorandum. Now, Miss Leah asked you about making mistakes. We all make mistakes, right?
Absolutely.
It's a flaw of human nature.
Elon Musk, yes.
Sure. Have you ever mistaken a 13-acre wetland for a 1-acre wetland?
No. Uh-huh. That I haven't done.
Okay. Have you ever been absolutely convinced that you made a mistake before you knew what the mistake was?
No, I think by definition, you'd have to say no to that question.
Yeah. Someone's got to point out to you that you made a mistake.
Right.
Well, so in Ms. Bartlett's memo, this is September 23rd, 2023. This is where she says Radicke thought they were mosaics, and that was the mistake they made. Okay?
Yes.
Now, if we trip back in time before September 23rd, 2023, and we look at the declarations that Mr. Wright, Mr. Koster, and Ms. Bartlett had submitted in response to our summary judgment motion, they also, in those declarations, talked about the mistake that they made in rating P2 with L2. Okay? And I'm just going to show you those and ask you about the language in them. Okay, so here is Mr. Wright speaking in the first person about why he thought at this time that Radicke's assessment of P2 with L2 was wrong. And he says, additionally, the Department of Ecology has now changed their guidance and no longer suggests that wetlands with differing hydrogeomorphic classes be categorized together. Does that have anything to do with mosaics?
No. And it's also an inaccurate statement.
It's an inaccurate statement, but it has nothing to do with mosaics, right?
No, and right. Nor does he mention mosaics.
Right. So at this point in time, Mr. Wright believed that the rating of P2 was wrong, but he did not identify the error in his own report as mosaic. He identified it as something having to do with hydrogeomorphic classes.
Apparently from this wording, yes.
Yeah. Now, we stripped down to Mr. Koster's declaration. He also tried to characterize the mistake at this time of what the mistake was that led Radicke to erroneously find that P2 was a category 2. And he said what Department of Ecology wetland guidance no longer states that smaller wetlands, such as P2, should be categorized based on their association to larger wetlands, such as L1, L2. Does this have anything to do with mosaics?
No, and it's also an inaccurate statement.
Yes. Was there ever a rule that just said small wetlands should be lumped together with big wetlands?
No, not in any methodology.
Yeah. And if there were, you would have expected Radicke to have associated wetland 12 and wetland L3 also with L2, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so now let's trip down to Ms. Bartlett's declaration. This is also her summary judgment declaration. And here's where she described, she wasn't quite as clear, but she also was describing why it was that Radicke made a mistake in rating wetland P2 with L2. And she says, although wetland P2 was initially categorized as a type 2 wetland with a habitat score of 29, a reevaluation of wetland P2 may establish that wetland P2 is a category 3 wetland because it is a slope wetland and should not be rated as part of wetland L2, L1, which is identified as a riverine wetland. Like Mr. Wright's declaration, that statement has to do with hydrogeomorphic classes, right?
But she's looking at it in a different way. So I actually haven't looked at this before. So all three of them are giving a completely different reason for why they think that P2 should not have been connected.
Fair enough. But her distinguishing between slope and riverine, that is a distinction about hydrogeomorphic class.
Yes.
Okay.
But it's not accurate if you just showed the data sheet that specifically says in the protocol that if you have a slope and a riverine, you clump them together as a riverine. So this right. is not an accurate statement either.
But it also has nothing to do with mosaics, right?
Nothing to do with mosaics, no.
So the only time anybody has ever talked about the mosaic theory was after Ms. Bartlett submitted her memo saying that was the mistake, which she made after she first gave this explanation, which had to do with hydrogeomorphic classes.
Yes.
Okay. So now I'm going to go back to the code. Just give me one second here. Ah, here it is. Now let's go back and look at the code. Now, first off, This rule about criteria for determining wetlands divided by a man-made feature, is this language, is that, was that in the wetlands rating manual in 2004?
No.
Yeah, it wasn't, right? This was a, this was a provision that was in the county code, but it wasn't in the rating manual.
Right.
Does this rule have, does, when it says perennial or intermittent surface water connection, does it talk about bilateral flow?
No, it doesn't.
Does it talk about hydrogeomorphic classes?
No, it does not.
So it has nothing to do with those two things.
Nope.
Yeah. But if we were to apply the plain language of it, it would show that P2 ought to be connected to L2 and they ought to be rated together.
I think the wording is fairly clear that it says that, yes.
Right. When I asked Mr. Wright about the dam theory, I guess I should, that's what I've been sort of saying in my head, the idea that the road itself created wetland P2. I asked Mr. Wright about how long it takes to form hydric soils. I did not ask him about a difference between organic soils and mineral soils. Did you hear him distinguish between those in his answers?
No, he was just saying a wetland soil, a hydric soil.
Right. And it's not, in fact, false that some wetland soils might form over a shorter period of time.
No, that's a correct statement.
It's a correct statement. Yeah. It's just not true of the organic soils in P2.
Correct.
Okay. Now, Ms. Leal, I asked you about the fact that your evaluation is being done based on photographs, right? They're the property owner. They could go out there and do test plots in the road area, correct? And they could give us the data and they could actually investigate whether that area has revegetated into a wetland or reestablishes a wetland as it appears to, correct?
Correct.
They could dig down below the road, which is not in a wetland, at least according to their delineations right now. They could dig down below the road. They could see if there are hydric soils down there, right? They could go out there in winter and in spring, and they could figure out how much water is going through that culvert.
Yes, to all of the above.
Do you know why they haven't done any of those things?
I have a theory, but no, I do not know why they haven't done those things.
I have no further questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Telligen. Ms. Liao, redirect or recross, sorry.
Yeah, I think I finally found what I was trying to look for earlier. Dr. Cook, going to share Radicke's 2007 report. This is from the appendix to that report. This is table B25. And this is got sample plot information from wetland P2. I'm going to go to this second page here. So you can take a look at this. Let me know if you need me to move around here. Does this sheet give information about the type of soil that's in wetland P2?
Yes, it does. It also gives a chroma of one, which automatically would have made it a wetland soil.
But I understand. What type of soil? Is this an organic soil or a mineral soil? Are you able to tell from this rating sheet?
They're not identifying the organic content. So they're just saying it's a gravelly loam and loams, they're only classifying the mineral content. They're not identifying the organic content, which we didn't way back in those days. The forms didn't have a place to identify it. So that's the problem with the rating forms back then. They didn't include that kind of info.
I see. So you're not able to determine from this rating sheet whether it's an organic or a mineral soil?
Other than the color would indicate to me it has a very high organic content. You don't get a black soil unless you have a very high organic content.
Okay. And then just want to pull up, give me a moment. Too many exhibits on my page here. Aha, okay. So I just one last time want to share this code provision one more time that we've been looking at. So Mr. Telgen just asked you again to speak to this code provision about criteria for determining wetlands divided by a man-made feature. I mean, I think just if I can summarize the testimony you've been giving today is that you're totally disbelieving that back in 2007, Radke made their determination based on it being, you know, mosaic. That's fair. That's your opinion. Your opinion is that they were following this criteria here in their thinking. Is that an accurate summation?
This coupled with the fact that there's a stream running through it, which would have connected it as one unit back then. So that Mr. Telegin outlined a series of reasons why, and this was just one of the part of the justification as to, this was kind of the nail in the coffin as to why it was not a mosaic. It was based on the fact that they were all connected back then. So this was just one of the many things that he outlined.
But it was separated by a man-made feature, right? I mean, you've talked about this culvert, but it's also separated by a man-made feature, right?
It was bisected by a man-made feature. That doesn't mean it was separated. Yes, it was
bisected, right? And so it's divided by a man-made feature, and at least in terms of the code, you know, we've talked through that the criteria for when it should be rated as that it's not divided, and there needs to be a perennial intermittent surface water connection between the two wetlands, which you've opined that there is. And then, but it also needs to meet these secondary criteria. And you've come up with some hypotheses that this criteria existed. But, you know, when Mr. Wright testified, and Mr. Wright was there working at Radke and developed this report, he did not speak to the evidence of any of these factors that also need to be present with regards to when you can rate a wetland as not being divided under this section of the code. Is that right?
Well, I'll qualify. I believe he said that he was not out in the field and didn't do the field work. He only did the technical review of the report. So I don't, I would, he said that Mr. Lundquist was out, but they assumed in the field and he assumed during his technical review that they were connected. So we had to go back and try to figure out why they decided, just there was no explanation of why they decided they were connected. They just did. And to backtrack and figure out why they had decided was what Mr. Telegin went over with me this afternoon as to exactly recreating what that thought process was. So no, he didn't outline it specifically. It was just a given in the report
that it was connected. Right. So this is all speculation by all of us, right? About what whoever was delineating that wetland at the time was thinking and why they made that conclusion. And we haven't seen any evidence from Radke that this was the rationale and that they had indeed determined it can be separate, demonstrated that the wetlands were separate prior to construction of the man-made feature. They had not necessarily done that analysis. Mr. Wright has provided testimony. He's not necessarily testified that that was there or not. This is all just speculation, right?
Based on some fairly detailed research, yes. Speculation that it could not have been a mosaic, that this was the likely explanation, yes.
And this is all evidence, not that you've gathered from being on site or looking historical photos. This is more recent photos you've been looking at, and these are your theories based on the colors of soil and the what you've seen and the various photos we've seen from Mr. Lubisher and Ms. Bartlett, and just looking at all the evidence in the record. That's what your determination is based
this
on.
This is based on all the reports, including the recent reports, but certainly the historic reports, yes. All of the evidence that's in the record, it's based on that.
Okay. No further questions, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Liao. Mr. Getches, did you have any recross?
No, I don't, thank you.
Okay, Mr. Telegin, redirect. Yeah,
just briefly, Ms. Cook, have you helped people get permits related to wetlands?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm a wetlands consultant.
Right. Who is it that is charged with the responsibility for going out and getting data to support what kind of wetland it is, where it's located, all that kind of stuff?
In my company, me, because it's me,
uh-huh.
I do everything from sweep the office, buy the office supplies, do the field work, write the reports.
Right.
But in a firm the size of Radicke, it's field crew, and then they bring it back, write it up, and then somebody does a technical review.
And typically, who are they working for?
Their client base good is developers. It's jurisdictions that they do third party review for, et cetera.
It's the person who wants the permit, right?
Right. Right.
Yeah. The person who wants the permit is supposed to go out there and get the evidence and figure out what code sections apply and what the proper categorization is and where the proper delineations are, right?
Yes, correct.
Right. In this particular case, who is it who is the proponent of the theory that wetland P2 is not part of wetland L2?
The consultants that are working for the developer.
Right. And for do you know what the decision actually said about the categorization of P2 in this case?
I believe it said that it was connected.
Right.
When the decision was made. Yes.
The decision was that it was a category 2, right?
Right. It was only after the appeal was placed, I believe, that suddenly it was not no longer connected.
Yes. It is the applicant's defense.
That's my understanding.
Right. Thank you. No further questions.
Ms. Liao, any recross? No. Okay. All right. Nothing from you, Mr. Getches?
No, nothing from me.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Cook. Okay, Mr. Telegin, looks like we have about 45 minutes left. Does that time still work for everybody to go to 5:30 tonight? Do we need to take a few moments to talk about next?
I was going to say, I do need just a couple minutes to quick break, but
right now. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
How about we come back in 5 minutes at 4:55? That's 7 minutes.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Thank you all.